with WHMP Sports.
It's been a while since we had a double
H.
It's
been a while. Yes. This is our first WHMP Sports interview with you guys as a married couple.
Oh, that's true.
You know what? I keep messing up and calling her my girlfriend.
She does. She keeps calling me her girlfriend.
And then my coworkers laugh at me.
But she is your wife.
She's my beautiful young wife. Yes. I love her.
So, you've done 3 races since getting hitched. The first one being...
Wait, when did we get married? July 22nd, right?
July 22nd.
July 22nd.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Did I write 23rd on the paperwork?
It's fine. It's one of those 2 days. I think you actually signed it on the 23rd, so maybe
yeah,
you did.
I signed it on the 23rd.
Yeah, you signed it. The
For anyone who's not aware, I am the Reverend Amy Kling. I married these two.
She did a fantastic job, I might add.
It was magical.
it was a good time.
It was a good time.
So that was, yeah, so we've had 300 milers since July 22nd.
300 miles since becoming...
Should not be in charge of our race schedule.
A wedded couple.
You know, those people who are like, I can't do more races because my spouse, my significant other is just worried and we have these conflicts. This is the thing that happens when there's no one to hold back.
Yeah. It's a
little frightening. This is where extreme compatibility gets you.
Yes. Too much racing. So what did you do for your honeymoon?
Crazy Mountain.
Honey. Crazy Mountain. Okay, so we're talking the first.
We went to Montana. It was lovely. And we saw Glacier National Park.
We did.
It was lovely.
And you just happened.
We went to Going to the Sun
to
Highway.
Run the Honey Hundo Crazy Mountain.
Yeah, it was hard.
So yeah. Crazy Mountain was hard?
It's hard.
You guys both finish it?
Yes.
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 What's special about Crazy Mountain?
Like, the course itself goes above 10,000 feet, or above 9,000 feet 4 times. Mm-hmm. So you're going above 9,000 feet. And we live here in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, so you're starting, the base of the mountains is at like 5 or 6,000 feet. So the elevation gain is still, what, 20-something thousand?
20-something, yeah.
20-something thousand. So comparable to other races we've done.
Except you're
the earth, I've never done a race where you're...
Where
you're going above 9. So this was the first time that I had to go from, like, I didn't do heat training like I should have and such, going from living in Cleveland to, like, I'm going to go
in Cleveland,
run this mountain.
And even though you
race.
Work in the attic, that only gets you, like dozens of feet above sea level. So it's not quite the same as being
a little bit of elevation and a little bit of heat in the attic. Yeah.
Yeah, but not quite the same as the physical training of being a pilot.
Right. Right. So there's that. And then the 20,000 feet of climbing, even in itself, even though that's comparable to what we usually do, I was coming off of a summer where I really didn't train as much as I should have. We did have a bigger race gap between Mohican in June and then Crazy Mountain in July.
We had a bigger race gap between our June 100
and
July
100. That was too big of a gap to not do anything.
Between your June 100 and your July. Now, those of you who are not familiar.
But the race gap between the June 100
calendar.
And the May 100 was smaller.
These months are all sequential, if you're not familiar.
But there wasn't an April one. Which is May, June, July, August, September. That's why we're off in October. We hope to God. That's why we're not coming to Cloud Splitter.
Are you sure? I've got like 10 days to convince them to come to Cloud Splitter with me. Weather looks like it's going to be lovely. I've already booked a hotel room. It's got like 2 queen beds. I only need one of them.
I don't think you want newlyweds in your hotel room.
No, I don't. But I think there's other rooms available. It's the Super 8. Anyone else wants to hang out at the Super 8? Annoying. So, you're going to take October off, though. You're going to take a few months off.
Well, yeah, we don't have another race till February. That's why it's harder to resist idiocy right now.
Yeah. So, did you get any injuries at Crazy Mountain?
I can't remember. Oh, yeah. My knee was hurt when I started, and it was still hurt when I finished. So, I couldn't. This is as most as it'll bend right now, but it's actually improved. Across all the races, it's actually the best it's been in months.
Okay.
No, I would say I came at it at relatively uninjured other than my pride.
You finished, though.
I finished, but it was a golden hour finish, and it was tight on cutoffs. And
you
so,
only made golden hour by a minute. If you'd been 1 minute faster, you wouldn't have even been golden hour. I mean, it's not like you were like...
That's still tight. That's
so first place amongst the golden hour crowd.
Okay. First place amongst the golden hour crowd. I like that. But no, it was tight, and there were times where it was questionable whether or not it was going to happen for me. So it was like a little bit of a wake-up call. I think the way we stacked our race schedule this year, it had its purpose, but it was also part of its purpose was to ease up on the training for a while and to give me time to prioritize other things. But like, it was a wake-up call that if that continues, I'm not going to be able to do some of these harder hundreds anymore. Like that fitness is fading.
So when you finish Crazy Mountain, were you like, oh my God, that's the hardest race I'd run all year?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's more to it too.
Was it the hardest one you run ever?
No. It was up there.
For me, I would say it was the hardest that I had run for me at the time that I did it. Yeah.
Any last thoughts on Crazy Mountain?
It's amazingly beautiful.
It's a beautiful
I kind of want to go
race.
Run it again.
It's actually pretty great.
Yeah, I remember seeing posts. Like, it sounded like this is the one you're going to probably go back to.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Plus, I could totally run
I think this race is going to explode. Like, yeah. I really do.
It's
and
crazy,
it just
beautiful.
Became a Western States qualifier this year now.
And this was the second year for Crazy Mountain.
Second year for Crazy Mountain.
Western States qualifier.
Race director's really cool.
Oh, yeah. She's
cool
great.
Swag. We got like what the nice thermoses and stuff. Like, yeah cool swag. Oh, and one of the nicest belt buckles that we have. Unfortunately, I don't have it on me right now, but it's probably the nicest belt buckle of
so nice.
The collection.
Overall,
collection,
sounds
right?
Like super positive reviews.
I'll be back. I'll be back. You have to see
Lee's
this.
Lee's gonna go fetch some swag.
She's
so it sounds like the final thoughts on Crazy Mountain is that you're super excited about it.
It's a great race.
It's
it was just hard
race.
For me personally where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And it is a tight cutoff. I don't know if they have any intention. I don't know if they want to keep it a tight cutoff or not. But I think there were a lot of golden hour finishes.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't sound like one that you'd recommend as a first 100.
No.
Oh, and it was point to point.
Definitely not a first 100 with that cutoff.
Yeah. If they extended the cutoff, would you recommend it as a first 100?
No.
Yeah.
Not unless you're already used to
mountain races. Yeah, like if you're a mountain runner, that's what I was going to say. Like if you're a mountain runner, that certainly changes things, but it's one of those things
where... Or if
you
backpack mountains a lot.
Yeah. And if you have some sort of altitude base.
Yeah, there's a lot of climbing. There are some big aid station gaps.
So there'd be
gaps.
A shit ton of caveats.
It's the long aid station gaps.
Pardon
those hurt new runners. Like when you don't really have crew access, like you cannot count on your crew getting anywhere.
So Crazy Mountain...
I ran with a guy at Crazy Mountain who I had to help him out with light and... even something or other else because, he was out of stuff because his crew person got a flat tire.
Yeah.
And it takes forever to get a tow. And so I'd help him out because he had left stuff with his crew and not drop bagged.
This is something Lee mentions
a
lot.
Happens.
Be like, self-sufficient.
And the gaps are huge and the aid stations aren't well supplied and there's small staffs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's an amazing race, but they don't have 20 volunteers, nor should they. And it's not advertised as that. I think that's actually great. I like that.
Yeah.
But you need to drop bag your stuff. You need to know how to plan drop bags. You need to be prepared because you're going to be out for hours without help. And you need to have your stuff in order and know how to handle yourself and get it out of your drop bags. And
And this is an example
socks,
of that,
that's what it was.
That true story that you always reference happen when you talk about being drop bag prepared is that Flat tires happen.
So it was actually two flat tires.
Yeah.
So she had to get towed. So he didn't have crew for almost the entire race.
So Crazy Mountain sounds like looking forward to you guys doing it again. We'll talk about it more next time you do it again. But let's show the buckle.
There's the buckle. I also wanted to mention it was really pretty
actually
hot.
Turquoise.
Too. It was hot and high. So
hot
and high.
This is
a beautiful buckle.
Yeah, this is
isn't it?
So this is the local Native American name for the mountain range.
Oh, beautiful.
They're kind of sacred mountains. And it's actually, the range is called the Crazies. And you go pretty much, they bus you out to the start and drop you off.
Any idea how
and
to
so
pronounce
you,
that? So,
no, I'm not going to embarrass myself trying that.
Yeah, that's a really pretty buckle.
It's pretty sweet. But yeah, so it's actually a whole mountain range that you do the length of because they bus you out and drop you off and you run back. So you're not repeating anything.
That's really
and they are beautiful, beautiful mountains.
Cool. So that's Crazy Mountain. So then we go on to the inaugural Jigger Johnson. So you're following up this super hard Crazy Mountain. with Jigger Johnson, that you had been to the White Mountains.
I've been to the White Mountains before, not this part of the White Mountains. What I thought about Jigger Johnson was I thought, okay, you get a 54-hour time limit. I thought this was a race that could probably be done in 44 hours, which is still a technical and tough 100, yeah. Right? Like, if it's going to take you 44 hours, that's yeah. hard. So that's what I went in thinking. And so, like I said, I mean...
Which is still, like, that's significantly more than other 100s that you...
Yeah. That's right. That would still be kind of a tough 100, but it's one you could, you know, where you're going to be doing, like, a lot of hiking. That's what I thought.
You don't need speed, you need endurance.
Was it before you were running 100s?
No. So it was after. And it's funny because I actually thought, gosh, it would be so cool if there was a 100-miler out here. They would never get it permitted, is what I thought. Yeah. And I do think that permit is a sensitive one. I will be frankly surprised if it's
really
if this race stays around long term. I will be surprised because I think people will get hurt. I think there's going to be problems, and I think that the whoever runs it with the White Mountains permitting. Mm-hmm. You know, whoever's in charge of
them, the permits.
Yeah,
it's multiple ranger permits.
Yeah, it sounded like they're already like, if this happens, the permit's gone, and if this happens, the permit's gone. Like, it sounds
it's
like
also
they were
local
just
law
really
enforcement
like, bam,
says
bam,
if you're
bam.
On the road, you have to be wearing a full neon yellow vest, yeah. Not your standard reflector
so
stuff.
It sounds like it was probably a ton of work for the RDs to get together this permitting. So if this
definitely.
If they manage to do it again, this might be a race where the course has to slightly change year to year.
No, there's nowhere else to put it, really. That's not the issue.
I don't know that it would change, but it's things like, you know, like if somebody was caught without a yellow vest, supposedly the permit's going to get pulled, like, you know, that kind of thing. And they told us, you know, if we see any of you without your yellow vest on the road, then
we're pulling you.
You're immediately disqualified. Sorry, but you'll jeopardize our permit.
That.
You know, so it just sounded like... You know, that something small and one person could ruin it for everybody. Like, it sounded like that kind of thing. So I'm surprised they got the permit for it. But, yeah, I went into it thinking I'm beat to shit from Crazy Mountain. And also my whole mentality has changed where all I want to do is stop racing and get back to training. You know, so I'm like, I don't want to really do this. But I'm like, okay, well, I have like 10 more hours than I need. So I'm just going to go hike this thing out. No, I didn't have 10 more hours than I needed. Like, that isn't 54 hours is not a generous cutoff at all for this course. So that's you talk about you going into it.
I felt pretty good. Like, I got a little beat up at Crazy Mountain, but like, I was recovered from it by the time that we raced. So I did not expect to, like, I knew I wasn't in optimal. I know I was at like, you know, 70 or 80% because all year I've been fighting injury. I got hurt in March. I got hurt in December and then was not all the rehabbed and got injured to the point of having to drop from a race in March. So I've been kind of like able to race things, but the speed's been off. The like, it's coming back. But like, even when I do intervals, when I do stuff, I can feel like my body's not quite all the way there. But still, it was mostly a hiker endurance race. So I was like, I can still hike it out. Like, Crazy Mountain went okay. I can get it done.
So before
and
you saw the course.
And Massanutten went pretty decently. Like, and it, I can still run stuff. So yeah, before I saw the course, the course was 118 miles. We're pretty sure, and not
it,
like it
somewhere
kept extending
between like 115 and 118 or 120.
They got to where they were
like,
saying it was 107, and yeah, it's somewhere between 116 and 120.
Like, what did we think? 105 going into it, and then I think it was like, but you were.
But that happens.
Yeah,
but it meant that so between the last aid station before the turnaround, so there's 9 aid stations, one of which is the turnaround, and they gap out further and further. So you go somewhere between 17 and 18 miles. To get to the turnaround with no aid. And that's over 2 mountain peaks. And then you have to come back across that. And so there were only 14 finishers. The bulk of the people that did make it actually out to the turnaround had no interest in turning around. They just shook their heads. And you'd see them coming in, like, because it was out and back, right? So you'd see no one coming oncoming. No one oncoming. You're like, where'd the rest of the race go? And you come into the aid station and there's just people everywhere, carnage. And then you come back out of the aid station, go back out thinking, well, there's people behind me. But then you're looking at the time going, well, like I turned around, I was like, well, shit, I've got like an hour and change on the, I'm less than 2 hours from the cutoff for the turnaround, but they get more generous as you go. But like I had to push the 18 miles back faster than I'd come in. And all the people oncoming are just going, you have a good race, you can get turned around. And they're going, not even wanting eye contact, just hanging their heads, just.
So you guys pass each other at some point.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
She said she was committed to turning around. She was one of the few people not looking. But she's always like that. She's more stubborn than average. Like, people were giving up having not missed the cutoff and still able to hike because it was just really hard.
Yeah.
You mean you're just drinking out of creeks and then no one had enough calories? So you come across the 18 miles and, like, you're pushing your pace and everything's wet and you can't see. And also it's not marked. So, like, you're trying to mess with your navigation, mostly by watch. But sometimes you'd have to double check on your phone because some of the blazes were missing in sections. And so you don't know where the heck you are. So you forget to eat. And you don't realize how much calories you're burning over these mountains and with the cold. And so what happened is you'd end up so far in a deficit that, holy hallucinations, Batman. Oh, my God. I hallucinated so much.
What's a good hallucination?
Night two. Okay, so you get turned around. And you go back to the Bartlett Experimental Forest Aid Station. So that's 18 miles. And I ran completely out of calories again and drank out of creek. And then I was trying to get myself to get calories in, but then I put in all the calories. I had a drop bag at every spot. So then I stopped and ate every calorie I had on me. And it was not enough to dig me out of it. And there's all these cats. They're like this big and they're watching me from the bushes and they were menacing. And so I decided that they liked me because it was too upsetting. Like, I was getting emotionally upset to the point where I was going to be crying and frantic. And I realized I was becoming a completely crazy person. Like, that's just a stupid hallucination. So
they're cats and they're large, but they weren't like...
They're
big cats. They were still like house cats, just as the size of lions.
Mutant ghost menacing cats. And they were watching me from the bushes.
Any tabbies?
And I knew they weren't real. I knew for sure. I knew 100%. And it was still upsetting. I was like, this is no good. My brain is broken. Ooh. Like, I recognized that I had gone way off.
Calicos?
And this is like... this is like 30-some hours into the race. Because I've turned around, but so I'm trying to get to the first aid station. I have turned around, and we're already at well over 30 hours. And so I decided they liked me, and that made it okay. So every time I got upset, I'd go, "The cats like me, so it's okay." So I got
so it's something you had to tell yourself.
Laura from the project came in, and at some point, I'm pretty sure I muttered out loud that the cats like me, so it's okay. And like, because I was repeating it to myself to stay emotionally okay. Yeah. Cats like me, so it's all okay. Because I didn't want to come into aid upset. I wanted to keep my brain level because I knew I had a drop bag, and I knew I could sit. And get dry feet and just put in like, 800 or 900 calories at aid and hope it was enough. And then put in carries everything else with me. And the hallucinations just got worse.
So it's Jigger Johnson. You would say harder than Crazy Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Was it crazier than Crazy Mountain?
Do you remember that? There was a whole trail section at Hancock Notch Trails, a creek. Have waterfalls.
So you
like multiple times I was like, this isn't the trail. So you check your phone, you check your watch, you're like, this is the trail. Okay. Coming out, that happened. So then going back, because this is like 20 miles out from the start, you're questioning around the trail. So coming back, I was like, oh, this is that section. There's no blazes. And half the flooding they'd had recently had washed the trail out into the creek. So there wasn't a trail in places. There was the creek. In other places, you had to climb up a bank. And there were people sitting on the creek bank and they were hanging a guy. And I didn't want to look at them. And so this was during night two. So I tried to go up the creek and I tried to bushwhack and I realized that no, the trail had to be on the other side, but I didn't want to look at I couldn't find the trail on their side because I didn't want to look at them hanging the guy because it was too upsetting. So I was standing in the creek trying to psych myself up to manage this problem and considering taking some more calories out, except that I was in the middle of like a 15-foot wide creek, just standing there at like, I don't know, 1 a.m. And these guys come along from the 100K because they start 24 hours after you coming back. And they were like, what are you doing? And I told them what the problem was. And they're like, you need to come with us. And then I tried to keep up with them for about 2 miles. So that's how
these were the guys I think you posted. You're trying to remember their names. And I think you did, because I looked them up on the 100. I was like, yep, there were indeed guys that would have been where you thought they were. You did not hallucinate the 100.
No, they were real. They were real, because they told the aid station about me. And another friend of mine from the 100 mile was ahead of me and was at the aid station and left right before I got there. And he was like, yeah, those guys came in. I knew that was you.
Carmel, any hallucinations on your side?
I did. On night two, I was having these pretty crazy hallucinations. Now, it always seems to be a night two thing for me. Mm-hmm. Like, at Orcas Island, it was these elaborate beads on the ground that, like, I was just seeing, like, you know, like, they were, like, looked like they were wood, hand-carved, hand-painted beads.
You see, and your hallucinations seem to be ground-focused.
Yeah, they're ground ones. That's kind of why I brought that one up.
Yeah,
so this was
because at Outlaw you had ground focused.
Oh, yeah, the dead animals under the snow.
Yeah, a lot of times they are, So this was very similar to the Orcas Island one with the beads, only this was like, I was seeing like stickers, like the kind you would see in like high school lockers. Right. So I'm like just going and going, and I know they're hallucinations, so I'm not really saying much about them. One of them was Brendan, is it Fraser? Is that yes. Or Fraser? I'm not sure how you say it. You know, the guy from The Mummy and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it was him, like, after he'd gained the weight for the Elephant Man with his shirt off.
The
like,
whale?
Yeah, or that's it, the whale, not the Elephant Man. Yeah, for the whale. with his shirt off. It was very detailed. I'm like, why would my brain even, like, come up with this? And, like, all I said at that point was just, like, my brain's interpreting things funny. And at one point, I picked one up, and it just turned right back into a leaf. And it was just...
All of them I knew. What bothered me about this was my blood sugar was so crashed. I was so destroyed that I was emotionally impacted. I knew there were not people sitting on a wall. Like, and I went up the creek and came back and they were still there, which usually you do that and the hallucination goes away. These were persistent and they were upsetting. I knew they were fake, but they were still upsetting. Like, I couldn't just never have I gotten that bad on calories. I've heard other people describe it, but if you wonder if getting too low on calories can create problems with your emotions, like, fortunately, I'm not inclined to just think that I'm actually dying or that my legs are broken. But it can make you have delusions about how injured you are or how sick you are. It can, like, so a lot of people drop because they're sure that something is broken or they're in failure of systems, like at levels where they think they must need the hospital and don't because it's too much sugar.
Yeah.
Always just put more sugar in, which had there been twice the aid station access, I would have had three times the Coca-Cola and three times the calories, and this, like, it wouldn't have been as severe.
Well, yeah,
I still would have been tired, but it would never have been that severe.
I mean, not only is it the hardest course they've done, at least in the United States, like, it's the aid station gaps make it substantially harder.
Yeah, 7 or 8 hours between aid is a long time.
Yeah, and then definitely, like, I mean, the progression of the race was just, it was so weird to watch it unfold and watch the spirit of people just crush.
Did you would have, like, if you had known that it was going to be as hard as it was, would you have packed more calories in the drop bags?
I don't think
you know that. I still had calories that I didn't use, my dumb ass. I got water out of the creek. I had extra powders that I was supposed to dump into my, because I had the spare water bottles.
Yeah.
Like, I was carrying a whole spare water bottle so that I could still have plain water because I had the back carrier thing. Mm-hmm. So I could have up to four of those half liters. I had doubled down on calories of powder. And I know from Fat Dog, I can do that because I did it at aid there. Dump 340 calories into a water bottle, shake it, and drink the entire half liter over 5 minutes, and then rinse it, drink a little fresh water and stow it. And if I'm at a hike pace, I can do that. And had I done that, I still would have run out. But I had, after the race, I had like 8 unused 340 calorie packets of powder that I could have put into things and never did.
So
I went stupid. Like, as soon as you get low, you get stupid from your low blood sugar, and then you make bad decisions.
So you wouldn't have necessarily packed more, but you would have consumed
more. I also would have packed more.
Oh.
I would have packed twice the awesome sauces. And, but I also...
Still have carried the same amount, or would you have carried more calories with you?
All
of the things? Would you have worn the same pack or something with higher capacity?
Same pack. I could have fit them in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had packed enough in the drop bags, but when you're getting into a day two and a day three, off of the gels and the bars and you don't want them anymore.
Yeah.
And then I was so tight on cutoffs, it was really difficult to get in any real food at the aid stations. Like, I would get to the aid, it was so hard because the aid stations were so far apart.
Yeah.
But then I would have to blow through them.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I felt like so on top of my game. Like, I was playing the pace game in the beginning of this race. And I was doing it well. And I even remember I ended up with this woman who she'd finished a few hundreds. But, you know, she considered herself like a back of the pack runner. And I ended up with her and Tracy. You might remember Tracy from like Cocodona. We've had a bunch of overlap with her, and we were just kind of moseying along.
Yeah.
Like, this is like the second segment of the whole race. And then I remember looking at my watch, be like, oh, okay, we got 50 minutes until the cutoff to this next aid station. Cause they like pretty much all had cutoffs from the very beginning, I think. And I was okay with that. Like, I'm like, we're going to get here like 20 minutes, you know, before the cutoff.
Yeah.
Like, but I knew the way the cutoffs rolled, and like the woman I was with, like, flipped out. Like, she's like, what? We're already chasing cutoffs. And she, like, took off, you know. And but I'm like, no, we're good. Because the way the cutoffs happened, it was like,
they get more generous.
Yes, you could, as long as you left a minute before the cutoff, you were still going to have, like, you needed two and a half.
Smart thing for them to do with considering that course.
But so then it's like, okay, well, you just need, from there, you just need 2.5 miles an hour. Well, in any other race I've ever done, if you need 2.5 miles an hour, like, that's the point, you have it in the bag. Like, you know, you're like, okay,
this sounds,
I'm good.
This sounds like one's, like, never in the bag.
You could freaking death march that and still get 2.5 miles an hour. Like, I remember Cocodona, that was like a celebration point when everybody got to the one cutoff where it's like, now we only need 2.5 miles an hour. We're going to finish. Like, you know, even though you had still like 30 or 40 miles left. But then you start realizing, one, that this course literally requires hands at sometimes. This course, sometimes you're up to your knee in sludge. You're wading through creeks and rivers. Like
upstream.
Yeah. And the course isn't marked. There's times where it's like, you're like, am I on? It says to go here, but there's bushes, and it says to go here, but this is a creek, because you're just, you're using your navigation, like, with the no markings.
Which is as advertised.
And in addition to that,
and we were talking off camera about orienteering, about how you really like that type of stuff.
Yeah, it was
fun. You've not done, like, sanctioned orienteering races. You just bushwhack a lot, and you like doing that stuff. So this was, like, right up your alley in terms of that.
It was just real hard to do
One of my questions was going to be, did you have fun? So it sounds like the answer is
I mostly had a really good time. It was a good course.
But then in addition to the other stuff I mentioned, too, as far as the 2.5 miles an hour goes, is then you start to realize segment by segment that each segment is a mile or two longer than what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so now that math doesn't work anymore. It changes everything.
Yeah.
And it was the last segment before the turnaround that had more mileage than anything. Yeah. It was often mileage more than any other segment, but it was the hardest damn segment.
Yeah.
It was insane. And you hit that over the first night. And that's where, like, people just, they dropped
it. Part of that was rough too, though, because so you'd go to the turnaround, which was a real aid station, right? You'd come back to Bartlett. I don't know how it was for you, but when I got back to Bartlett to get my drop bag, so you've gone 18 miles with no support, which is fine. Yeah, it should have been 15, but whatever. That's margin of error on new races. So you get there, and they do have an aid station table that's under a tarp, right? But it's drizzling, and there's no chairs to sit in. They had one chair that a runner could sit in, and there was a guy passed out of it. So there's no tarp to be under. There's no tarp to sit on. There's no chairs to sit in at all. And there's nowhere to sit. It's gravel right next to where you can get food. So if you need to, like, do a sock change and dry your feet and everything and mess with stuff in your drop bag, you can't. Usually I would sit in a chair and, like, get some food to eat the food, do two things at once. But you're not close enough to the aid station table. The aid station volunteers aren't coming over and help. The radio guy is why there's only one chair, because he's using a second chair for his clipboard. But he has to check you through. Otherwise, you're not accounted for. And it's really important that you do know which section runners are in. So if someone goes missing, you know where the heck they went.
Especially somewhere where, like, people are having to navigate.
But, that made it where she's saying you had to rush through and then it was hard to eat.
Yeah.
Like,
you're rushing through something without any help to rush through.
Like, it would be, you can't accrue. It's not, which is fine. Like, I'm good with self-sufficiency, but that was definitely where it was like, for real?
Yeah.
For real? Okay, because that aid station had car access, so you could bring in a lot of stuff. Like, because, you know, you read an aid station chart, and you know if there's no roads into a place.
Some had proof they might have brought a chair.
Mm-hmm. So that's all right. No, but that was just the one thing that struck me.
That actually happened to me at one spot. Somebody was like, our runner's not here. Sit down. And as soon as I sat down, they're like, oh, Samantha, whatever her name, you know. And they're like, I'm like, oh.
At least they try to help.
It's nice of them to let you temporarily use a managed chair. Because I've seen what my chair looks like after I use it for myself during a 50K.
Those chairs are never the same.
I tried to bring my ultra chair to a soccer game, and I was so embarrassed in front of, like, my friends, like, soccer mom's friends, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's a mark where my butt goes.
fortunately, that was an early on one. Oh, yeah, because there's this one. So I had my worst wipeout of ever at this race, and it was literally, I just, like, walked off some steps because I was looking at my phone. Like, there is this one part where you cross a road, and you go into the woods, And there's these steps. And for whatever reason, I assume that these steps are going to go all the way down to the trail. And I'm like, I better look and see how long I'm going to be on this trail. It's daylight at this point. It's like not that late in the race.
You're right by a road.
I'm like reading the phone and I'm going down these steps. And it turns out there was just this 2-foot drop. And I just like walked right off of it. And I'm like just there, just like, ah, like my worst wipeout of ever was literally I just walked myself off some steps. Like,
I'm actually amazed no one got hurt. I'm really glad no one got.
So there was blood later. My point being that I was glad I used the chair before that, because then later people would be like, "You're bleeding," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's fine." Like,
a lot of people were bleeding.
Like I'm like, it doesn't. Oh yeah, that, and I had like a grapefruit size like bruise.
Johnson, there will be blood.
Yeah, I'm like, these things aren't even registering on the pain scale right now. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, just scrapes.
There's 14 finishers, Jigger Johnson. How many women finished?
Us.
So two. Yeah. These two right here.
Yeah.
Proof that you don't need to train or be recovered. You need to be stubborn as
that. And that was part
of. You guys don't train.
No, we are training. I trained more than she did this year.
That was sarcasm. You guys do train. You guys have a whole program about it. You're literally writing a book.
No, but we have not done enough training this year.
There has been very little. And actually,
Crazy Mountain was training for Jigger Johnson.
Well, it's funny because Rick brought this up, I think, on the way to Jigger Johnson. He's like, "Do you do runs that aren't on your Strava?" My friend was asking, and I'm like, "No, they're all on Strava." And he's like, "That's insane." And I'm like,
She's raced
He's
more
like,
miles
literally,
than she's
like, all of your miles are race miles. You do. Like, because I
No,
really
you had
was,
like 300 something.
It was like,
race miles.
Like for the whole year, the whole prior year.
So this is Rick Holman, he ran Jigger Johnson too.
He did. He ran Jigger Johnson too.
And Crazy Mountain.
But yeah, he
and
was saying how they were like looking at my Strava, just like, what the? But it
like
really
trying to figure out what your training plan is, and they're like, this can't be it.
And I'm not saying don't train. I had a strong training foundation before I started stacking hundreds. But then when you start stacking hundreds, where you're doing them monthly or bi-monthly, then especially for me, the training kind of just it diminished. And like I said, part of the reason I stacked this year the way it did was because I knew I had some other priorities. And it was like, if I stack the hundreds, I could keep up my endurance to run 100s, but not have my life be all running, because I needed a break from that. And it served as purpose, because now I'm like, I don't want to race right now. I'm so burnt out on racing. Right. I just want to train super hard.
Well, that's something about the training plan you guys have put together too, because even if you are 100% on the training plan, there's so much strength focus on it. You're not doing the same mileage that Rick's doing on his training plan.
Right.
Because he does like 80 mile weeks.
He does. It didn't work for him.
And it works for him.
Oh, he didn't drink.
Yeah, like he finished Crazy Mountain and Jigger Johnson too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah, he did. But yeah, it was crazy because I was for Jigger Johnson, I was very much back of the pack. Like I had maybe two
there
people behind
me. There was
no
pack. There were 14 finishers.
Well, no, I'm talking about the beginning pack. Like for the entire beginning from the start on.
Yeah.
From the very, very beginning, there were one or two people behind me, and I don't think there was at any point more than three people behind me for that whole going out segment. And that very last section that I said was the really bad one, I remember passing a girl who just seemed like she wasn't doing well. I was like, "You're okay?" And she's like, "I wish I had caffeine." I'm like, "I have some caffeinated gels. Take these." And I'm like, hey, we're going to start seeing the out and backers. That's going to give us a boost.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, keep it up, you know. Yeah. I'm like going, like, you know, just trying to be like positive because she was so like, I'm like hoping that like once everybody starts coming the other way, being like, good job, that like we're all gonna feel better. And like nobody's coming. Where are they? This is weird. So then like sunrise comes up, I'm still not to this damn aid station, like I'm still going.
Oh, yeah,
and then it's like a few guys had gone by. And then Lee goes by, and I'm like, that's weird. I should be to the aid station in like a mile or something. Because there were like 13 women ahead of me. And then like, I realized very quickly that like,
I passed nobody else.
Were you guys the only two women to make it past the halfway point?
Yes.
Were we?
Yeah. I'm 100% sure. I might have been the last person to leave the halfway point, or there might have been one guy behind me, but he didn't finish leave the halfway point.
Were you the DFL?
Yeah. Yeah, I was DFL and second place female. Yeah, you always know it's an exciting race when that happens.
Yeah.
And more interesting is I was pretty much DFL the whole race.
Like, 54-hour
time. But DFL is also podium.
Yes.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to the, so I get to the out and back, and there's like three or four guys sitting there just like, that. And then like, I'm like, do I have time to change? Like, I got there like maybe 20 minutes ahead of the cutoff. Like, again, and that was miles longer than they said it was going to be.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, do I have time to change my shoes? And they're like, yeah, yeah, of course you have. Change your shoes. Change your shoes. I'm like, okay. And I'm like changing my shoes.
They're like, she actually wants to go back out.
They're like, are you going back out? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I asked if I had time to change my shoes.
Yeah, this one guy's like, you got grit, man. And then the other guy's like...
Isn't it such a compliment when somebody tells you you've got grit? This old man named Rock in Death Valley told me and Marley we had grit after a camping trip. Like, we hiked out to, like, a ghost town and camped in and came back. And he was like, those girls got grit. And he was, like, an old grizzled Old West man.
I think and I was like, more.
This was many years ago. And I'm like, I still... live for that compliment. So being told you have grit.
I think especially by an old guy named Rock.
Yeah, his name was Rock. His skin was like leather. He fed on donkey meat and lived in a ghost town. He was amazing.
Yeah, no, it doesn't get better than that for somebody saying you have grit.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, then some guy was like...
If Rock thought I had grit for that, Rock would say you got crazy grit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
You got donkey grit.
And then while I'm changing my shoes, like, yeah, you know, I'm doing the alcohol and stuff. The other guy is like, I mean, just so you know, you've only got like 8 hours to get back to whatever. And again, my mind is like, oh, yeah, that's like 2.5 miles an hour. And then I'm like, then I'm remembering, the section I just went through, and it was like 2 or 3 miles longer than they said. And I'm like, that's actually not a lot of time. And I'm just like, so then, I mean, it was like, I got there in the nick of freaking time.
Yeah,
like,
I hurt myself coming out of the turnaround because I wanted a buffer on cutoffs and I definitely pushed too hard. Like, I got it done, but I pushed way too hard that first section after the turnaround.
Yeah.
I ran into Laura. So I was rough.
Unfortunately, I didn't do like any like crushing analysis on this like I like to do for WHMP. I think an interesting thing to look at, and if you're interested, look it up yourself because I'm not doing it, is how many people actually went back out and turned around versus how many finished. Because it sounds like if you made it past the halfway point, you're probably one of those 14 people that finished.
Well, once you do that, there's been too much suffering.
Yeah.
You make it back to Bartlett and make that cut off, and it's like, no, I've suffered too much. I'm continuing no matter what now.
Yeah, like I said, I think if anybody else, I was close enough to that cutoff to know for a fact that I did see one guy running in, and I actually feel really bad because I might have lied to him. I left that aid station, and I'm going back out. And then I passed this guy, and he's running, and he's like, am I going to make the cutoff? And I'm like, yeah, you should be good. But I could have lied to him.
You don't want to say no and be wrong. So if you're going to lie, you may as well say, like,
because I thought, like,
go for it. Because if you're like, no, and he starts walking, and that's the reason he misses it, then you're a real asshole.
Because I thought the aid station was, like, right there, like, not even a half mile. Yeah. But then your judgment by that point is so just, like, shot. That I'm
you
like,
really can't be
what if I lied to him? And he's like, I am going to make the cutoff. And they get there and
they were being flexible. If you came in cheerful looking good, they were being flexible. On
like, you had two things they you could have said yes or no, and you never say no.
So they were, like, so, they didn't announce hard cutoff. Some races have a hard cutoff, which means if you don't leave aid...
Yeah.
1 second before that cutoff time, you are pulled from the race, period. You can't continue.
Did this race have an application or qualifier process?
Yeah. It was a little bit loose.
No, it was loose. It was like you could be like, it didn't have to be a race.
I would
have
made a tighter one if I was in charge.
It didn't have to be a race. It could have been like.
There were a lot of people out there that were out of their depth due to the way
there,
it was done.
I would say at least half of them were out of their depth. Now, also, though, I mean,
it's hard to know.
Even having the experience that I have, I would have never expected a race like this.
Yeah.
In the United States.
Oh, it was so pretty.
Like, they just don't get permitted
do it
here.
Again.
Oh God.
So Crazy Mountain was like a definite
yes. Not next year.
But Jigger Johnson is a.
It's a lot of wear and tear and time.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing is that we've had this discussion. You know, we dabbling in the 200 pluses and such, and it's like. well, what's the right amount of time? And I think it gets to a point where you go after night two and it's day three and it's just, it starts to just not be fun. And
it is for some
I've
people.
Proven
yeah,
some I
can, but it becomes less your thing, right? 100 right. miles are clearly your thing.
And this is, it's like I've proven I could do it. I've proven I could go yeah. grind out 5 days on the damn Cocodona course. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel that, like,
you definitely seem to have way more fun on this one than
oh,
it
yeah. it's beautiful. I mean, this
yeah,
was
this
more
phenomenal,
fun,
beautiful.
But it's a matter of, like, how often do I want to do that?
Yeah. This is not an every year race,
sparse.
But
yeah,
was,
what I repeated again.
I wish I'd had a chair to sit in, but it was real 100-mile aid stations.
Yeah.
Like, people were trying to help. People cared.
Yeah.
It was, like, that vibe you get at hundreds
yeah.
where there's a community. So that, yeah, the deterrence of Cocodona would be, there was zero of that, except for, like, 3 aid stations.
Yeah. So Jigger Johnson gets, overall, we had fun.
Yeah. And
we
it was
had
beautiful.
Fun. We might be
it
back, but
hard.
This is not an every year thing. This is a
when you, yeah, it's not
you might. It, this is some,
it
something
so
you might get a taste
though.
For it at some point. You'd be like,
and the
what
other
I,
thing is,
you know what I feel
not,
like?
Not rained out.
Jigger
Johnson.
Johnson. I've got like a weird craving
like,
for a Jigger Johnson.
It could happen. It rained all week because
yeah.
next because
I mean,
next year we're gonna go to Iowa.
I don't think we'll repeat this one, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, because if I want to go do a race like that, I'm gonna go do it in Europe. Like,
yeah.
I think we try to do like one overseas race a year, and that's more on par with the way the European races
yeah.
are. So if I'm going to do a race like that, then I want it to be one that's like somewhere
but
I've never been
who
before.
Wants that type of adventure, who has that type of fitness and
it's
qualifications
phenomenal.
For it,
yeah.
You would say
was,
like,
it's a good
go
now.
For
what
it.
It's just real hard.
What I would enjoy,
obviously not a first 100.
No, well, I mean, you do you. There were a couple people that I think were running it as that. And there's people that are capable of that. Like, there's people that come from through hiking. If you're like a real good through hiker, or if you go do like 10 days backpacking in a row with no resupply, things like that, and you're used to backpacking and sometimes doing a 16-hour day because you want to get a stretch done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people that, absent a ton
that
of race experience, actually have so much experience with the outdoors that they're capable. Because there's
okay.
so much difficult hiking and there's so much navigating.
Yeah.
That if you are a person that has done enough,
so this
backpacking,
might be something if you have an adventure racing background,
possibly.
If
but it better be a few. Like you need
yeah.
to be the couple days up.
Yeah,
not all adventure races. A lot of them work in stages and limit
yeah.
the amount of time awake. This does not,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people just don't understand what a full
right.
night two does on zero sleep.
Yeah,
I don't think you
a,
can until you do it.
This is made more like people who go for FKTs.
But so there's people
yeah.
that could do it as a first 100.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's just not a good choice usually.
Yeah. I mean, I think they would be very few and far between. And like
yeah.
you said, they have a really exceptional record of doing
of
some,
something.
Of
some
other things.
Sort of other thing.
Some very serious other things where they're managing
yeah.
a lot.
I'm talking like through hiking for speed, that type mm-hmm. of thing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But as far as anything else, I mean, obviously you can see what happened to the field, but no, especially, yeah. I mean, trying to manage calories during your
mountains.
First 100
yeah.
is hard enough when you're out there for, you know, a day and a half.
Well, the 5 and 6
when
mile
you get
gaps,
into
and,
day
yeah.
2 and 3 and you can't, like, you know, even at that point, I'm like, I can't eat any of this. I can't even eat my Oreo concoction anymore.
Oh, God.
And all I want to do is brush my teeth. And like, you know, it's just,
that's
yeah.
what you get for marrying a dentist.
No, she came that way.
She,
people assume that I have influenced the oral hygiene, which is, her oral hygiene is fantastic.
Who assumes that? Who's
but
ever
she,
talking about
because
my
Because I'm a dentist. I made her want to do hundreds, which is also utter and complete bullshit. She came, she appeared already with impeccable oral hygiene and already really set on 100 milers.
Gosh, she's like,
she was not
made
do
for
those
you.
Things. I know that's
I
why
brush
I married
my teeth
her.
3 times a day and I floss. Same.
Brushes, flosses, runs 100 milers.
And she likes me.
That is quite the combo.
I know.
Before we finish talking about Jigger Johnson too, we also have to say swag. Let's check the swag. Show us the saw.
Swag saw.
Swag saw. So not everybody got a saw. Lee got a saw because she won. You could say that. You see that it says female first place. If Lee and Carmel hadn't decided to go,
I wouldn't have a saw.
To Jigger Johnson, they don't have a year written on that saw, so they would have just saved it to next year because they would have had no female finishers if you guys didn't go.
I kind of feel like I should have gotten like a little Barbie size saw for like second place.
Or one of those 50 mile flasks. Those were pretty cool.
These things.
So, last thoughts on Jigger Johnson.
Okay. Okay. No, I feel like I should share. I've been reluctant. This is so intertwined, though, I feel, with my Jigger Johnson finish that I do want to kind of share this story.
Okay.
But I've been reluctant because it's like bashing somebody, but
exclusive content. Yes,
exactly. I did kind of want to share it because I feel like it's so related to our project.
I know what story.
Yeah. Do you think that's okay?
You're not going to use.
No, I'm not using names. No, I'm not using names, right?
Stop tweeting.
But so, in the very first segment, right? Or no, this was the second segment, right? Because first segment, there's like a little leapfrogging with some people. Like, my uphill was still just completely shot from Crazy Mountain.
Yeah.
And then I still had like some downhill. Like, it was doing all right. It wasn't 100%, but like, you know.
But you got pretty good downhill skills. Yeah, so you're still passing people.
I could pass the people on the down. So the leapfrogging was happening as usual. So then the second segment happens, and this guy catches back up to me. I'm like, oh, you guys go ahead. Like, you're clipping the uphill faster than me. And he's like, that's because you're not using trekking poles. And I'm like, no, it's because I just did like the hardest race I've ever done 3 weeks ago, and I'm not fully recovered. And he's like, you'd be more recovered if you used trekking poles. Like, what?
Bitch, you know who I am?
Yeah, like it was like, you don't know my training, you don't know my history, you don't know my anything, you don't know what races I've done without trekking poles, and done, like, I've had some damn good performances on some high elevation.
Did your trekking poles finish?
He did.
It's later in the story.
But that comes later in the story. And then it's like, as we're going along, like, I keep leapfrogging with him, and he's like, giving out horrible advice to, like, women, you know, telling them, oh, you know, you gotta, like, we gotta pick it up now and put some in the bank. And, like, as you know, no.
You gotta pass them on the downhills, going, you'd go faster on the downhills if you didn't have tracking poles.
Yeah. Right. Well, then it's funny, because he made the whole comment, too, at some point, like, you know, it takes, like, 80% or whatever it is off your legs, and it's like, and yet here we are at the same spot on course.
Yeah.
You having an advantage of 80% off your legs, like, or whatever the exact, you know, number is. But yeah, so then, like, later in the race, well, also that one woman I told you who had finished like a few hundreds, and she even won one of them. Yeah. She said, I'm back of the pack person, but like, it was like pouring the whole time and everybody else quit. And so I won. And I think it was Klaus Blair maybe, but like, which is awesome. Like, that's what you need to figure out to finish Jigger Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, later he was running with her and just giving her bad advice. And I could see, like, speeding her up, and she's, like, out of breath. And I'm like, oh. But, you know, you can't give, like, unsolicited advice. You know, I can't be like,
you can't.
He was doing it.
I do it.
You could just give the advice of, don't listen to him.
People don't like it. People find you very arrogant if you go out and start doing that. Just like, I found him very arrogant.
Yeah.
For, you know, so it's like, I so badly wanted to, like, pull her aside and be like, no, you got what it takes. You know, don't do,
do your own thing, man. You've completed some hunters, and there's a number of ways to do them.
Right.
You can't change your plan at mile 30 of 100.
Yeah. So then, like, after the turnaround, I had the whole ass to make it to that aid station. Laura Kepich was actually at the aid station. It was funny, like, this is somewhat relevant. She ended up pacing me for night two. I don't know if you know that. Like, I never used crew or pacers.
Yeah.
But Laura was like, you know, I talked to Lee, and she's like, and she told me that, like, if I offered to help you, you'll say no. Like, and that I shouldn't do that. Like, I'm not doing that. She's like, but, you know, my runner dropped, and I'm all ready to go. And I'm just saying, you know, but there was something about it. Like, she had this, like, you know, I would always say, usually I would hate to even be in that position
of having to say no to a pacer.
Yes. Like, where, because exactly, I don't like pacers. I don't want pacers. But she just genuinely had that, like, glimmer in her eye.
Like, I want to get on
of, this like, I've heard how awful it is, and I want in, you know? Like, it was like, I was actually just, like, surprised in myself that I was like, yeah, okay. But then I said to her, too, I was like, how do you do technical down? Because I go faster than the down, which was funny because I didn't realize it until after we started running together. I had no down left. Like, she was, like, kicking my ass on the down. It's like, but, yeah, so I told her, you know, that she could she could pace me.
You should join me.
She was going to meet me at the next aid station, though, but she did run me out so that we could talk about it a little bit. And as we're running out, the guy's running in, and I look at my watch, and he's, like, missed cutoffs by, like, 10 minutes. And Laura's like, oh, poor guy. And I'm like, But then he ends up catching up to me later down that part. He's like, oh, yeah, I mean, I missed it, but I was going to tell them I was going anyway, no matter what. And even if they said I couldn't, then I was just going to upload my Strava and be like, see, I did 100 miles on Jigger Johnson or whatever. You know? So then, like, I'm like, oh, man. And he's like, clearly trying to run with me. And I'd seen every time he lost somebody, he would try to connect with somebody else. So I'm trying to be, like, very polite. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like, you know, this race is, like, oh, he said that somebody else said that I said the race was hard. I'm like, yes.
It is.
Like, Lee has even said it's the hardest 100 she's done. Yeah. And what, you're over 1600s now? Yeah, at 1600s?
57.
Yeah, 57? Okay. I thought you were at 50.
I know, because I counted.
Well, I thought you were at 57 a couple of races ago.
Okay, still. 5700s, and she thinks it's the hardest one.
And he's like, you think this was hard? And I'm like, yeah. And
everyone thinks it's hard.
So then, still trying to make conversation.
It's objectively hard.
So then, still trying to make conversation, I'm like, yeah, I don't think people knew what they were getting themselves into. Like, you usually don't see this permitted in the United States. And he's like, this is just how East Coast races are.
Oh,
and I'm like, what the hell, East Coast race? Name me one. Name me one
Did
race.
Did you say that out loud?
Like, you know, I was like, I can't think of another race like that. But, like, yeah, you know, I get angrier the more I think about it later, where it's like, not Eastern States, not Hellbender, not Massanutten, not Blood Rock, not anything. Like, there's no other 100 that comes even close to comparing to Jigger Johnson. The only thing I've seen anything like it is the Swiss Alps race we did.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only course that I would say is similar.
And there's one in the Pyrenees.
Well, I didn't do that with you, so I can't compare. But, like, for the Europe, and the, just having looked at pictures and videos of the European races, those are the only races that compare. So, yeah, so he says that to me. I'm like, you know, like, okay. So then later on, I dropped him for a little bit. He said he had a snack or something, but he got back up again because it was on an up. Yeah. And of course, my ups are, you know, so then I'm like, oh, well, I'm like, I've got a snack, you know? And he's like, oh, I'll wait at the top for you. And I'm like, oh, no, I kind of just run my own races. And he's like, oh, well, I think we should be together for, you know, night two. You know, I've never been up for two nights in a row, and I don't I don't know about the, I don't know about the hallucinations. And it was just, it was fun because this guy literally challenged everything I said. Like, even I said,
like, oh, you'll be fine. I've done it lots of times before.
The other thing that raised an eyebrow was I said this one woman should go to, I was like, oh, I hope this woman gives another try to hundreds. She should go to Wild Goose. It would be perfect. Not knowing what the weather, you know, that there was going to be a tropical storm remnants coming through Wild Goose. I'm like, it would be perfect. It's like a gentle course, 36-hour cutoff, 12,000 feet of elevation gain. And he's like, she can't do 12,000 feet of elevation gain. And I was like, what? And he's like, well, look at 15,000 for the 50 mile. It's like, I'm like, 15,000 feet over the course of 50 miles is drastically different than 12,000 feet over the course of 100 miles. Like, so he obviously didn't know that too. But, like, the whole race, he was, like, talking to people like he knew everything about hundreds and all this, you know. And then, so Laura tells me, the next aid station is where I was supposed to pick up Laura. Laura tells me that he was there waiting for me because he didn't want to cross the rivers by himself. And then he said, like, after he waited for a while, he started saying he was going to turn the RD into the Rangers and all these things because the river crossings were too dangerous and all this stuff. Now, he did end up finishing at, all I could figure is that he must be one of those fast packers, because it turns out that this was his first 100. And not only was it his first 100, he's only got like four or five things on Ultra sign up, like a 50K, something else.
So
like, it's like his fourth Ultra. Like, so yes, he must have something that allowed him, like he must be a fast runner too, because he would be able to like catch back up at certain points.
I've done more Ultras than that.
But the advice he was giving for hundreds were absolutely terrible. And just by point being, I guess it's like, it's something that fired me up. Like, it just continued to fire me up throughout the race, where it's like,
so how many miles of this 118 or whatever that you did would you say were fueled by rage
Oh, I think a lot of it. I mean, I think it, not necessarily right, but like that motivation of like, well, now I have to freaking finish
something.
Like now I got to finish, like, because
you always got the idea to finish in you.
I don't know. This one, I was really going into it just so beat up from Crazy Mountain that I'm just like, I'm going to do what I can. But like after some of that occurred, I was like, finding out too that Lee and I were the only females left.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't about like, if I finish, I'm going to be in second place. But it was like, no, women are going to finish this damn thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm like, I gotta do this. Cause it's like, you know, I think he was only talking that way to women too.
Yeah.
And that's something you never see really a woman do, is show up at a race course like that, acting like, I know everything about hundreds, even though I've never run one before. And then I think what killed me is watching women take his advice,
and
especially the woman who had more experience.
Mess up their own races.
Yes, the woman who had more experience than him. The woman who finished a race in bad weather conditions, first place, who would have been more equipped, you know, to execute her race properly. She listened to him. And, you know, she was the one who kind of disregarded what I was saying about the cutoffs, where it's like, hey, no, chill, we're still okay.
Yeah.
Like, we're still okay.
Pace yourself.
Like, at that early on. And, you know, I was wrong to some degree because of the mile difference later on. I was chasing him a little bit, but I also think that chasing him a little bit, that was the only way. Like, you can't run until you're out of breath and then think you're going to do it for 3 days. Like, you know, so I wanted to bring it up for that purpose. And I guess I'm reluctant because the field's so small that it's not hard to figure out who I'm talking to, but also like, I feel like my story is my story to share and I shouldn't have to share my story because somebody else was, you know, somebody else was behaving a certain way, not me. That's why it's even, that's why it's even a story. But
well,
I think
a certain level of, I mean, that kind of stuff really is problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see it in the workplace. You see it everywhere. You see it in the tour group. I mean, it was part of the inspiration for starting our group to begin with. And it just kills me to see that still where it's like, you know, I mean, we're never going to stop it single-handedly.
How much lack of confidence there is. So women have to fight the lack of confidence in themselves and the tendency to believe.
Right, right. Because
nonsense. Sometimes someone will ask me, I'm like, well, I think it's probably going to go better this way. That's been my experience. Like, well, have you run other hundreds like this? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how many hundreds have you finished? And then I tell them, they're like, oh.
And then
explain that again.
Hmm. Yeah.
And but I will not dictate if I'm like, if you don't want advice, it's.
And you have some sense, too, of the things you do that are just you versus what work for the
general.
Yeah,
I run a liquid calories
that work.
There are people who if they drank 340 calories in a half liter water bottle, like the majority of people, if they did that repeatedly, will throw up.
Yeah.
Most people cannot tolerate sugar water at that strength. I have an unnatural ability to tolerate. And if I'm pushing harder, I can't. I have to water it for a 50K. If I was doing 25K, that would make me throw up. But yeah, I'm pretty much just drinking grape broccoli, like sugar water, 340 calories in a half liter. This is way too strong for most people. Most people will throw up. I have to eat Tums to tolerate it, but I'm such a bad eater. It's the only way I get enough calories.
Yeah.
But I know people who can run whole races on actual food.
Well, yeah, I don't go into the Women's 100 Miler Project and say, what you should do is dump raw coffee grounds down your throat.
Carmel does
this. You know,
this.
Like, there's just things that, like, you should know. Don't. And the advice that was given was just... This is all like 50K advice. This is 100 miler advice.
Oh, I'm gonna use
you
poles,
can use
for the first 8 miles of
we don't
of
like
cloud
poles,
splitters.
But that doesn't mean that poles aren't
and I don't
somebody.
Mind it when people ask me nicely about why I don't use poles. I know it's kind of peculiar in some races.
Well, I mean, cloud splitters uphill for the first 8 miles, and then I can leave the poles behind at a drop bag, so it's kind of.
I'd use them if I was you doing that.
But I can't even imagine being so, like, you know, presumptuous to be like, oh, that's because you don't have poles. And you'd be more recovered if you, like,
you
without
know
knowing somebody's
has
story.
The hand ability to hold poles.
Right.
Like, without knowing
well, it's also,
anything.
It's dependent on a lot of things, like, what's your upper body strength? Have you been training with poles?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm
using poles because...
And
look at that.
For anyone who cares to ask, I have a lot of my own reasons, and I have some reasons that I probably wouldn't publicly share because I know they're just my personal stubbornness. But it's just like
you're stubborn.
Sometimes
stubborn.
But anyway,
stubborn gets you to the finish line a lot of times.
It does. I've definitely finished some things out of pure stubborn.
So Jigger, so Crazy Mountain had been the hardest race you'd ever done.
And Jigger Johnson.
After you did Jigger Johnson, what was the hardest race you'd ever done?
Jigger Johnson.
It was Jigger Johnson. Jigger Johnson.
Yeah. I've done some other hard races, but it's definitely up there at the top five. It's always hard because the more recent a race is.
Right.
And because if I had done Jigger Johnson, the most trained up I've ever been, like if I ran it fully recovered and all the way trained and uninjured, I think that I could take my time down into the low 40s or mid, well, no, not low 40s. I think I could take my time down to like 46 hours or something.
Of Jigger Johnson. Mm-hmm.
But I'd need to be all the way trained up and all the way recovered.
Yeah. It's not a race to do. And then, 3 weeks after Crazy Mountain, as it turns out.
But it would still be an incredibly difficult race.
But you did it.
Things that have you out that long are still incredibly difficult.